This time at PollHub, COVID is killing more Americans each week. One of the vaccines has full FDA approval. New vaccine mandates are happening almost by the hour, and vaccination rates are rising. What's going on? What are the connections between all of this? We're looking at some interesting recent polling data to see what it shows. Then, on the heels of a new report showing very little of the $46.5 billion in emergency rental assistance funds has been dispersed, the debate over a moratorium on evictions is hotter than ever. What do Americans think? And finally, Lee's fun fact this week is unquestionably on Lee's absolute number one, top of the charts, five-star favorite topic, the Boston Red Sox.
Oh, no, hold on just 1 second. I spent 6 years in New England fighting off Fenway fanatics. This is about the New York Yankees, the most coveted franchise in sports history. We'll talk about that.
I guess I got something wrong there. Okay, we'll clear that up. Lots to do. Let's get to it. Hi, everybody. Welcome to PollHub. I'm J.D. Dapper.
I'm Barbara Carvalho.
And I'm Lee Meringoff.
We have talked a lot about COVID-19 over the last 18 months on this podcast, and it's interesting to look back at the things we talked about in the survey questions that we and others were asking early on. They were questions about how you were changing your life because of the pandemic, what it was doing to all of our lives. The questions have largely changed over the last few months to focusing on the vaccines. And in particular, this week, there's been a lot of news around that. The FDA has formally approved the Pfizer vaccine, one of the three vaccines we use in the U.S., after the emergency use authorization, which has been what's allowed us to get the vaccine over this time. That triggered lots of things. The Pentagon, companies, universities now mandating vaccines in some short order to come back to campus, to come back to work, to be able to do things. At the same time, vaccinations have been increasing in places that they haven't been, but so have hospitalizations and deaths. And there's a lot of polling around this asking non-vaccinated people what would get them to get the vaccine. And so what do all these data points mean? What is it pointing to? What is it telling us about the chances that we're going to get closer to fully vaccinated?
Well, I think I'm not sure vaccine hesitancy is actually the right way of characterizing this. We have about 7 in 10 adults who are either fully vaccinated, partially vaccinated, or say that they intend to get vaccinated in the very near future. And hopefully the FDA approval will help some of those people, get vaccinated and kind of make that jump into what is, considered hesitancy, but for about a quarter of American adults, hesitancy doesn't quite define what is going on here. They are pretty locked in terms of what would actually change their minds about getting the vaccine. There's a YouGov poll that was out just the end of January, and they asked a whole list of potential
end of July.
It's hot. I'm thinking January exactly.
Yeah,
already. But they did ask a whole slew of possible reasons or things that would allow people to change their minds about the vaccine. Top of the list was, getting FDA authorization. It was one of the tops. But only 9% of adults said, yeah, that would change their mind. Now, again, these are Americans who say that they have not been vaccinated and they don't plan to be vaccinated. So FDA authorization only moved, not even, 1 in 10 of those Americans over. If it could protect their family from COVID, that was actually one of the top choices as well. 14% said that that would move them. They looked at incentives, money, $100, if their employer required it, if they feel that they needed the vaccine in order to be able to travel. These are all single digits, 8, 9. And I think if you were to look at this list in combination, you would find that each of these things only incrementally changes the minds of those who are not likely to be vaccinated. I think what we're seeing is what we've seen, you know, in a number of other polls when we look at trust. And these people are distrustful of institutions. They're particularly distrustful of government. And it's a huge, huge, you know, obstacle to getting to the vaccinated numbers that the country is going to need in order to be able to shut down COVID.
Yeah, here's one that really, you know, stuck out for me. You know, we've talked about Donald Trump and, you know, the grasp and the control he has of his supporters. And so Donald Trump is in Alabama earlier in the week, and he encourages people to be vaccinated. And he gets booed.
He gets booed by his own folks.
From his start. So, you know, if for those of you who want to know what's the one issue that Donald Trump's base will desert him on, it's when he encourages them to get vaccinated. Isn't that a sorry state? I think that we also, in all of this, you know, reality news about COVID is real. But the people who aren't getting vaccinated think it's fake for a variety of reasons. Reality TV is actually fake, but they think it's real. So how do you get out of this box of what's real and not in an era of alternate facts? You know, science has, and Barb alluded to this distrust, or I guess you did, Jay, also, this distrust people have of institutions. You know, here you've got these scientists who are going through, you know, a very difficult process to come up with this vaccine, which is saving lives. And they're met with, what's the thing that cows produce and people are starting to experiment with it?
The ivermectin dewormer. I use it for the horses too. I mean, actually it's used for most deworming, and it is used in humans as well. Obviously a much different dose than you would be giving to a cow or a horse, and you definitely, definitely don't want to be purchasing it at a feed store.
Yeah, it just seems like the wrong place to get my vaccine, you know, get myself covered from COVID. And then earlier, of course, at that press conference when Donald Trump was talking about some kind of cleaner product that was going to, you know, that should be looked into. I mean, we have to get back one way or another to some kind of scientific approach. This is a process that is rigorous. It's been tested. Now we have a permanent authorization of this. Even the emergency authorizations saved countless lives. And now we're in a position where we can move ahead and ultimately get this thing under control. But it's still going to take time because, you know, the variant keeps breaking into new things. And this particular Delta variant is very contagious, such that most of the people who are being hospitalized are not vaccinated.
I think what's interesting, though, in some of this polling data that we're seeing, one thing that stands out, and the Trump thing is interesting, if not just from the perspective of that rally he had, but also in that YouGov poll, Donald Trump urged you to be vaccinated. That got like a minuscule number of people saying, oh, that would convince me. But we are seeing vaccination rates increasing in fairly significant ways in the most vaccine hesitant, or whatever we want to call them, states in the Deep South. You've got to believe some of that has to, a lot of that, because this, the fact-based, the science-based stuff, that's been around. It hasn't changed anything. The number of people dying, the hospitals where you cannot go into the ICU because there's no beds, that strikes me as what must be motivating at least some of the people to get vaccinated who have not up to now in these states. Does that make sense?
Well, sure. Well, but sure, Jay. I mean, if you think about it, if you're looking at a quarter of adults nationally, and you say, okay, a quarter, 10% of that quarter is going to get vaccinated because of one of these reasons. The FDA authorized it. They've gotten to the point where they feel that they do need to protect their family, and they believe that a vaccine will do that. They need to go to work. They need to travel. You know, they are, you know, they may be in a place where they want to go to a restaurant or a business establishment that is now requiring people to be vaccinated. So if you have about 1 in 10 of that, you know, quarter of Americans, that's still millions of people.
Got it. Yep.
So to see these numbers and to say, yes, you know, there are, you know, we are now seeing greater vaccination in these areas. Absolutely. And these numbers speak to that. The real concern is really the other, you know, 75 to 90% of Americans who are just saying no under any circumstances.
Of the ones who aren't vaccinated now. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I would just, you know, just add to the point that we need to get to that next level to bring this under control, because the people who are creating the new variants are the ones who are being and are not being vaccinated. And we need to get to the point where, you know, freedom of the individual is replaced by the community health needs of not only themselves, but their friends and family and the rest of society. We're not at that point yet with these folks.
Well, another thing that has been discussed of late too, which is also pandemic related, is the eviction moratorium. Joe Biden did get the CDC to extend the eviction moratorium, which had recently expired, but there certainly is anticipation that the Supreme Court will overrule it, you know, once they are in session. So the concern here is that in both relief packages for COVID, there was quite a large amount of money that was designated to give relief to both renters and to landlords for, you know, for people who were out of work and who were not able to pay their rent. Not a lot of that money has been spent. It's been very, very slow. It's not as much a federal government problem. It has to go through each of the states, and each of the states has to set up their own processes. Certainly, the federal government applications have been lengthy and bureaucratic, but some states have been able to move forward with this. Others have not. The bottom line is only a small proportion of this money has been spent, and the time seems to be ticking. What are the implications here for this particular, you know, program, and for those people who are in dire straits and have yet to be have gotten any of this relief?
I think it's worth noting real quickly. It's just worth noting that more than a third of Americans are renters in their households. That was in 2019. So this isn't a small number of people. Not most of them are being evicted for sure, but renters. We are a nation of homeowners, but we're also a nation of renters. And I just think that's worth noting that we're talking about a lot of people. Lee, jump in.
You know, we hear Congress and the White House debating figures a lot, and we're hearing it now right in the debate over infrastructure. And then we hear things like it only involves so much new money because previously a lot of funds haven't been spent yet. So I think we have to also look at just what the problem, the breakdown. It's hard enough to get things past Congress and then get the president's signature, particularly during the Trump years, but it's no picnic now for Biden. But you get to this point where it gets allocated, it gets approved, and it doesn't get allocated. So, I mean, it's a new level of breakdown. And in here, if I'm hearing what you're saying correctly, we have lots of money sort of sitting on the, you know, the table with people in dire straits needing it, and it's not moving along the pipeline. And that's just, you know, outrageous.
So the latest poll on this was from Morning Consult and Politico, and it was just about 2 weeks ago, and it was asking about whether the CDC should, whether voters or, yeah, voters, this was a voters poll, registered voters supported the idea of the CDC banning evictions or putting a moratorium on evictions from some point of time. There is somewhat broad support here in that it's 53% of all voters, at least somewhat support or strongly support this, and only 33% somewhat opposed or strongly opposed. So that's a significant divide, but it's totally partisan. Only 31% of Republicans somewhat or strongly support it, but 75% of Democrats do. So like so many other things that we talk about these days, it's a very partisan divide. But I do think it's worth noting that in general, Americans support this idea of an eviction moratorium. I wonder how long that, and the CDC doing it, I just wonder how long that lasts. Because as we get further, kind of not past COVID, but further past the point where there's been a lot of disruption, the disruptions are less, whether that support continues.
Well, and also, to what point the relief is required, because as we get back to the new normal of people able to be to get back to work and to have an income and to be able to support the livelihoods and the lives that they had pre-pandemic, the issue, I wouldn't say goes away, but certainly gets reduced so that it's not at the crisis level that it was during the pandemic. But you mentioned, Jay, it being certainly a partisan issue in terms of support and opposition to the program itself. But I also found it very interesting that it's not necessarily just red and blue states that are having a problem, red states holding back the money, blue states spending the money. It actually seems to have to do with, the bureaucracy within a state itself. So you have a state like, New York and Ohio having just as much difficulty, as other states that may not have the legislature or the ideological interest of moving this money down the line. I think one other thing to just point out is that Pew did a study of who renters actually are in this country. And so it's not like it is, this is affecting people, it can affect people from all walks of life, but is mostly affecting people of color. Nearly 60% of Black Americans, Black adults rent their accommodations. Over a majority of Latino and Hispanic Americans do as well. And it's impacting mostly those who are younger. These are the people who are, having a tough time, getting started. If they're under age 35, under 40, you're seeing really a majority of those Americans are renters. And so these are the groups that it's intended to target and to give support to get back to normal.
Hey, Lee, before you go to fun fact, I want to clarify, I had actually the numbers I quoted from the Morning Consult political poll, the question was not exactly the CDC question. The question was people who support or oppose a federal ban on evicting renters who live in substantial or high COVID-19 transmission locations through October 3rd. The numbers are pretty similar to the CDC's thing, but it is a different question. I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, well, and now we turn to, of course, to the fun fact, which it may come as a surprise to our listeners that we actually follow what's called a rundown, which has sort of like topics of discussion and time allocation and who's going to take the lead discussion. That I think probably surprises almost everybody who listens to us. But under this particular segment, it says Lee can talk on his favorite team as long as he wants. So get comfortable. The question was asked as we pull out of the Roper archives in 1999 by Fabrizio McLaughlin and Associates. The question was asked, which was the overall best baseball franchise of this century?
And of course, meaning the 20th century.
They're going back to then. And well, for Yankee haters, this is going to come out as probably not surprising, but very unpleasant information, and that is that 47% of registered voters nationwide said the Yankees were the most best professional baseball franchise, and second place was don't know, And the Braves, which include Atlanta, the Milwaukee, and Boston locations, if you're going to go way back to time, I do remember the Boston Braves, they had 7%. So there's no one in double digits except the Yankees, and they're at 47. Now, I have to unfortunately poke a hole in this finding. The poll was done in 1999, in November. The Yankees had, I believe, just swept the Atlanta Braves four straight to win the World Series. What was really interesting about this particular week, so those numbers may be a little inflated given the time of when it was, but when the Yankees played the Atlanta Braves this week, you have to go back to 1901 to find
120 years ago. 120
years ago to find a time when two teams were playing each other, both having a 9-game winning streak on the line. The Yankees won that game, and to put salt in the wound, they then won the following game. And I would say not since Sherman's March to the Sea has the Yankees decimated Atlanta to a more.
I don't know, Lee. I don't know.
Oh, that was a reach.
I think that's a low blow. I mean, really. I mean, the fact that you know you were sitting, you know, on the edge of your seat as the Yankee closer Chapman practically gave the second game away. I think that is a little bit of Yankee hyperbole.
Well, the Yankees have won. Let me try this one on for size. The Yankees have won 11 straight games, and that's the first time since 1985 that they've done that. And we'll see if they can get the all-time franchise this week, which would be 19 straight games, which they accomplished in 1947. So this phenomenal franchise standing on the precipice of making yet more history. And I think that's probably, I see Ashley, you're doing a kind of like a wrap-up thing. Is that what?
That's a wrap-up thing.
All right. Well,
can you just mention, Lee, just really quick, that 2% of people thought the Mets were the best professional team of the night of the 20th century, and 2% thought the Cubs were, I mean, those are die hard fans. You got to give it to those 2%, I think. Anyway, that's my 2 cents for the 2%.
And Tampa Bay hasn't had such a bad winning streak these last couple weeks either.
They're making it difficult for us to catch them, but there's still 35, 40 games to play, and the season is just getting to be down to the final stretch. I will not let Ashley get mad at me, so I will say it will be turning to this topic, I hope weekly, but if not, at some point before the season takes a final turn into the home stretch.
And that's going to do it for this edition of Poll Hub. Poll Hub is a production of the Marist Poll at Marist College in Poughkeepsie, New York. I'm Mary Griffith, and Poll Hub's executive producer. Casey Schaff is our production supervisor. Ashley Marcinek is our production assistant, and Marcello Bettman is our trusted editor. Thanks to the Roper Center Archive at Cornell University. They provide us with the ability to look back at survey questions and results over the decades. If you have questions or comments, reach out to us on social media. We're at Marist Poll on Twitter and Marist Poll on Facebook and Instagram. And while you're at it, check out our free series of short online learning modules. The Marist Poll Academy can be found on maristpoll.com. Finally, if you like what you hear on Poll Hub, please consider leaving a review on your podcasting app of choice. Positive reviews help others find us. And while you're at it, go ahead and subscribe. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you back here next week.